there's a real question about whether there's a massive shift happening now in terms of alliances long term.
Well, it's definitely, I think, a new world order.
Battle lines for new world order based on power.
The new world order.
Because you really need to bring China into the creation of a new world order.
I think the president has sought to. There's a new world order in trade. There's a new world order in globalization and the way that we invest in our economy versus, you know, foreign supply chains. There's a new world order, and the president is willing to shake up some old alliance structures. I mean, NATO, I think, is much different because of the president's leadership than it was 10 years ago. It was sort of coasting. It was effectively a protectorate of the United States of America. Obviously, you saw what happened in Venezuela. So, yeah, the president is putting a stamp on world history.
This clip went super viral, and I had people tagging me to it saying, what do you say to this? You know, you like J.D. Vance. Here he is saying he's for the new world order. You have to go off what the policies are to decide if they're new world order. And the Rockefellers and the globalists for 80 years have been calling this corporate British Empire, U.S. Empire, neoliberal system the new world order. That means the carbon taxes. That means the UN being in charge, the World Economic Forum calling the shots, BlackRock being in total control, the whole Bill Gates, Rothschild, Rockefeller, international neoliberal order that they had established, that they admit is totally in trouble. Everybody's turning against them, regardless of Trump.
I see the need for a great reset. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world which we had, and everything will be normal again. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and restricted their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
Let's start with a term that we're hearing quite a bit about in the last couple of years, the New World Order. We like to say in this country that we have the ability as Americans to elect. But the problem is we do not have the ability to select. We can only elect, which means that we can only vote for those candidates which are put before us by our masters, our hidden masters behind the scenes.
A new world order can emerge, a new era.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
That system is in free fall collapse. So when you hear the old international order is dead from them, their new world order is dead, you see Putin saying, we now have to work with other nations to build a new world order. You're talking about the new international order.
Before our eyes, a completely novel world order is taking shape, and it's unlike everything that we know from the past. For example, Westphalian system or Yalta system. New powers are emerging. The nations understand more clearly their interests, their self-worth, uniqueness, and identity.
But the public, when the globalists would talk about their plan, they were saying, we control the world. We're establishing a planetary government, our new world order. So you call a new order, whoever it's run by, you can say America fighting off the British, creating the American system was a new world order. And the British wrote, if this continues, our empire will fall. And it did. It took 100 and some years. That's the point, is a new boss, a new system. And there's a lot of the old same globalist players in there trying to salvage this and repackage the old New World Order as the new New World Order. And there's a big battle inside the Trump administration on how we form this new system, because a new system is being formed. And I don't just expose the globalist system and other systems, the communist systems. I promote good ones and try to get the public to promote good systems. Team America, Team Humanity. A system pro-God, pro-family, pro-natalist, pro-expansion. That's what I always explain. We can't just oppose the globalist order. We have to promote other systems and popularize those so that we can fill the vacuum with our new world order. That isn't a centralized global government, but is nation states working together towards common aims and promoting freedom and justice and soft power. I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. While you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Alex Jones lights the fuse, and Harrison Smith keeps it roaring. This is the War Room.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on, and by the way, I want to announce quickly, we've got iodine. It's back, folks. Probably the best-selling, most popular product in InfoWars history was our iodine product, and we have reintroduced iodine in even better form. It's T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture, precision-prepared atomic iodine. It's a high-quality trace mineral tincture designed specifically to support thyroid function, hormone balance, T3, T4 activity, and healthy metabolic signaling. It's available now on thealexjonesstore.com. T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture. It's on sale now. Special sale for VIP members. It's 50% off for VIPs, 25% off for everybody else. Plus, you can get the America 250-year-old T-shirt. That's a limited edition at only $14.99. That's over 60% off. That deal ends Friday, 13th of March. But go today to thealexjonesstore.com and get T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture and see what it can do for you. And with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, David Pine. He currently serves as the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Mr. Pine previously served as National Security Policy Director for United States Senator Mike Lee of Utah. He also served as a United States Army officer and worked as an international programs manager on the Department of the Army headquarters staff responsible for the countries of the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, the Americas, and Africa from 2000 to 2003. He's an expert on geopolitics and has unparalleled insight into the complexities that contribute to the balance of power in international relations. You can find the task force at emptaskforce.us. David Pine writes at dpine.substack.com. That's dpyne.substack.com. And you can follow him on X at America First Con. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Pine.
Hey, Harrison. Great to be back with you.
Good to be back with you as well. Of course, it's been a while, and I feel like every time you're on, we're on the cusp of a disaster. It's a little different. Now we're in the middle of a disaster, so it's a little bit different, you coming on today. What's your view of the Iran war? Do you think it's a disaster? Just give us the bird's eye view of the conflict currently raging in the Middle East.
Yeah, I call this war Operation Epic Fiasco because I think it is a quagmire that Trump has gotten us into. Certainly, he may have the ability to get us out. He's given conflicting signals virtually every day. Just think it was yesterday he said that the war was very complete.
Yep.
Sort of, essentially. And then a couple days before that, he said that, they probably won't surrender for many decades. And that the war would continue until they unconditionally surrender. So he's really made this a very open-ended conflict. He even stated that we could fight this war forever if we had to. His objectives keep shifting. Virtually all of those objectives are unachievable in terms of taking down Iran's nuclear weapons program, taking out their underground missile silos and missile cities, and certainly overthrowing their regime. And I guess he can boast of overthrowing their regime because he replaced the Ayatollah Khomeini that had a fatwa against using nuclear weapons against the U.S. and Israel with his son, who's has no such compunction, apparently, and is really the favorite runaway favorite of the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. So more of a hardliner than his father was.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting a handle on what the aims of this war are, or how our leadership feels about it. I mean, I got criticized yesterday because I started the show with sort of a grok rundown. I was like, I got to use AI because I can't keep up. I mean, you know, you see one video that says one thing, then another video the day before, but actually those videos are reversed. And it's like, no, I need a computer to help me like establish a timeline here because things are changing so rapidly and so sort of, you know, arbitrarily. When it comes, and the nuclear weapon aspect of this is maybe the least certain as far as I'm concerned. Half the people are saying the nuclear weapon thing is a total red herring. It's not even a threat or never was a threat before. Half the people are saying actually they have, you know, essentially have nuclear weapons and could launch them at any time. I mean, it's every end of the spectrum, and I don't know, you know, where the truth lies. In your view, what is the condition of the Iranian nuclear program? Does it even exist, and how far along is it? What's your take on that?
Well, you probably recall that for the last four or five, since you first had me on your program, I've been saying that Iran likely does have nuclear weapons. They likely do have nuclear missiles, IRBMs, MRBMs that they can fire off at other countries. I don't think they have ICBMs that can hit the United States. But certainly they likely have super EMP weapons. The NOR-2 and NOR-3 satellites are in orbit about 285 miles over the United States. And that is the optimum EMP vector attack altitude that I computed long before they did that. If they want to use a single super EMP over the center of the United States to shut down our entire critical infrastructure and electrical power grid. So I do think they have nuclear weapons. I think they've had them likely for a decade or more. So the very fact that they likely have nuclear weapons and they haven't used them shows that there was no imminent threat from Iran. And certainly that's been proven or echoed by the Pentagon, that said they had no actionable intelligence whatsoever that Iran had any intention to preemptively attack the United States or Israel.
Well, and as the war rages on, again, we're getting completely conflicting reports from both sides. I mean, both sides are basically saying we're winning and it's going great. What do you think the truth is? I mean, and I ask that in the context of a nuclear weapon, and if Israel is getting, you know, smashed in the way that it's portrayed every night when, you know, I get on X and I just see these videos of Tel Aviv getting smashed, and I worry that, you know, they're a nuclear power, they're going to set off a nuclear bomb. Where do you think the momentum is? Like who's winning this war? And what do you think the conditions are that get us closer or farther away from a nuclear bomb being deployed to settle things once and for all?
Well, I think that, the conditions for victory have been clearly set out by Caroline Leavitt in the White House. You know, she, of course, is the White House press secretary. And of course, they've been modified since the war began. They're no longer the three I mentioned. Now they're, severely degrading their missile capacity, sinking their Navy, ensuring they never have nuclear weapons. And I think regime change may have also been removed. And basically any, in terms of degrading their nuclear program, that's been eliminated as well. But even the four remaining objectives, I think, are largely unachievable. I mean, certainly there's a chance we could sink their Navy. The chances that we can really destroy the bulk of their ballistic missiles, I think that's very low. We certainly can't prevent them from obtaining nuclear weapons, whether they have them or not. They have reportedly about enough highly enriched uranium to build up to 12 to 15 atomic bombs. Which they could miniaturize and put on their nuclear-capable ballistic missiles, and including hypersonic missiles, perhaps even hypersonic cruise missiles. Essentially what the president has done is he's outlined a set of objectives that are unachievable. This is an unwinnable forever war. The only way we can overthrow the regime, there's really two possible ways. One is a nuclear first strike, and I think that's probably off the table. And I think, and the other one is that we deploy 500,000 U.S. troops to Iraq and attempt a ground invasion to take Tehran by force. And we don't have the troops to do that. You know, there's only about 460,000 troops, active duty troops in the U.S. Army, several hundred thousand more in the reserves. So if we were to do that, we'd essentially have to deploy the entire active duty, U.S. Army and mobilize hundreds of thousands of reserves. And I guess that's on the table because, Carolyn Leavitt, I think 2 or 3 days ago, she said that President Trump has not ruled out resuming the draft, which we haven't had since 1972. So for the first time in 54 years, we're going to reinstate the draft. That really suggests that they might be seriously contemplating a full-scale U.S. ground invasion of Iran. And it really kind of makes a joke of all of his supporters that continue to claim this isn't a war when, we've killed or wounded thousands of Iranians. There's up to 20 countries involved, according to Fox News this morning, and 150 casual U.S. military casualties, including the bulk of those are wounded, and we've hit 5,000 Iranian targets. So obviously, this is a war, and as Martha McCollum, Fox News host, stated today, this is the closest that we've ever seen in terms of a war looking like World War. World War since the end of World War II.
Right. And the European countries seem to be getting involved as well. And that goes hand in hand with France previously already talking about upping their nuclear stockpile and really sort of rattling their saber in that regard. As you're talking, and the crew is playing some videos of these underground cities of the missiles in Iran. I understand that we have bunker busters. There's a lot of stuff we can destroy. I mean, what do you think the situation really is between resources between America and Iran? I mean, America is saying we've destroyed their missile. They can't even launch them anymore. Meanwhile, Iran is saying we're prepared to go on for 10 years. Again, these wildly dichotomous claims. The truth's got to be somewhere in the middle. What do you think the situation is for military resources in the case of Iran?
Well, I think the problem is that Iran likely started the war with about 10,000 offensive missiles. The U.S., I think, probably had about 4,000 missile defense interceptors. I've heard that perhaps half of those have already been expended. Best case, we run out in 4 to 5 weeks. Already, I think we're prioritizing our missile defense interceptors. So essentially, we're only defending vital targets. Any target that's considered non-vital, we're essentially allowing the Iranian offensive missiles to get through unless they're targeting, our missile defense radars and missiles. But we've already seen Iran destroy, several of our, I think we had maybe a total of 8 missile defense radars. I think they've destroyed about 5 of those. And one of those was $1 billion and was really in charge of coordinating our THAAD missile defenses over a 3,000-kilometer perimeter. And so what I've heard is, previously we had 30 minutes warning time from offensive Iranian missile launches, and now we're down to 1 minute of warning time. So I think our missile defenses have been badly degraded. I think we're going to run out of certainly defensive missiles and likely offensive missiles as well before they run out of offensive missiles. Probably well before. And reportedly, they have enough missiles to last them 60 to 90 days. Whereas by the end of the month, I think we will be pretty much exhausted of our certainly defensive missiles. So I think that Iran has the upper hand. They are the most likely to achieve a strategic victory over the United States. The U.S. certainly and Israel will continue to score some operational tactical successes. But if we lose the war, just like we won every battle in Vietnam, but we lost the war right after dropping the equivalent of 510 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs on North Vietnam, a country that was over 10 times smaller than Iran is today, then it really doesn't matter. I mean, winning the war is really the key.
Well, and what does that even look like? Because as I play it out, I mean, Iran, they're in it now, right? Like, if they try to stop now, they're only setting themselves up for another attack, you know, a year from now once we've rebuilt our forces or whatever. So, like, what is the Iranian victory conditions look like, do you think? Because they aren't offering any off-ramps so far. So far, everything I've seen, they're basically saying, we're not interested in talks, we're going to keep this war going as long as we think we need to. What would Iranian victory conditions look like, do you think?
Well, I think their victory conditions are the same as they were back in June. You might remember that Trump also called for Iran's unconditional surrender on June 17th of 2025 in the run-up to Operation Midnight Hammer. So he called on them to surrender. Instead, he essentially accepted their terms for a ceasefire, which were, the Islamist regime gets to stay in place essentially indefinitely. They get to keep their nuclear weapons program. They get to keep their ballistic missile arsenal of consisting of MRBMs and intermediate range ballistic missiles as well. So I think those are kind of the, Iran's conditions. And essentially, what they're wanting is to reestablish deterrence with the U.S. and Israel to ensure that they won't be subjected to future U.S. and Israeli, unprovoked acts of aggression, including military strikes, both on their political and military leadership, and also on their military critical infrastructure, because we've seen Israel take out 30 of their oil refineries in opposition to what President Trump has asked them to do.
That's what I mean. Is like, okay, I understand that victory condition, but to me, that means they want America out of the Middle East. Because if I'm Iran, I'm not going to trust America to say we promise we won't use them. I want the missile batteries gone. I don't want it to be an option anymore. And so, is that where this goes? Is like, Iran says you put any bases in the Middle East, we're going to blow them up? Because how do they achieve that level of security of being safe from American attack if America is still there with the capability to attack? Is that not itself an impossible war aim?
Well, I don't think that's impossible. In fact, I think President Trump is certainly his national security strategy, which I think is outstanding, that he published in December of last year, and then subsequent to that, a national defense strategy in January of this year. I think those pretty much spelled out that we would, pull the bulk of our forces out of Europe and the Middle East, and that we would let Israel provide for its own, its own defense within the Middle East and ensure stability. So President Trump has gone against his own national security strategy in conducting this forever war. And, I think it's going to cause a lot of big problems. General Kane, of course, Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as the director of the Joint Staff, Vice Admiral, who President Trump fired, they both warned that this the chances of success in terms of the missions that Trump had outlined were quite low. And President Trump was angry to hear that. He wanted to hear that, in 4 to 5 days, he could accomplish all of his missions, go home and outdo, George W. Bush, who he'd called for Bush's impeachment during the Iraq War for committing U.S. forces into a very similar forever war as Trump is now doing today.
I completely agree. What do you think the likelihood is that we end up with boots on the ground? They keep saying it's not happening. Pete Hegseth earlier today gave a speech where he reiterated, we're not putting boots on the ground, certainly not at the levels that would be necessary to invade Iran. But we've seen, I know you've shared some rumors about, the 82nd Airborne Division having their exercises canceled and possibly being prepared for deployment. What do you think the likelihood is that we have American boots on the ground in large numbers?
Well, I think President Trump is, he's pretty unpredictable, and he kind of shifts back and forth. He kind of has this bipolar foreign policy. And so it makes it more difficult to predict what he's going to do. But I think the logical outcome of, of a war that's, a forever war is that you're going to have to, if you're going to keep fighting the war and you run out of missiles and defensive missiles and you want to keep fighting and you want to have a chance of regime change, then I think you have to back that up with hundreds of thousands of ground troops invading Iran. And the problem is Iran is surrounded by mountains. It's got the Zagreb Mountains that are along its border with Iraq. So there's really, this would be a very, much easier to defend. It wouldn't be subjected to, large scale U.S. armored thrusts as we saw in the Iraq War that the U.S. used very successfully, both in the first Iraq War in 1991 and the second in 2003. So I think the chances increase with every passing day that the war goes on, especially if it goes on the next couple months.
And of course, we are already apparently repositioning THAAD batteries from South Korea to the Middle East. And we're being told, we can fight forever. It's no problem. Why are we repositioning the THAAD batteries? I mean, is that not a pretty glaring, warning signal that things are not going as intended when we're repositioning these very crucial defensive, batteries from South Korea to move to the Middle East? I mean, what does that signal to you?
Yeah, I mean, President Trump, when the war first started, he said the war is going to last 7 days. Then he said 4 to 5 days. Then he said 4 to 5 weeks. And then he said maybe forever. So the fact that within the first week of the war, he was already calling for, to reposition our global missile defense stocks to the Middle East, it was a clear indicator that he had been told that to have a credible chance at victory, this war is gonna be a months long fight. He would in my judgment, do that unless he believed this war was likely to last for the next 100+ days, as we heard from CENTCOM. CENTCOM is reportedly planning for a 3 to 7 month war at this point. So I think that's kind of a realistic assessment of what. How the war is going to last. I don't think the war can be won if you define victory as a regime change and taking out their nuclear weapons program and missile defense program in that time period. I think it's going to take a lot longer than 7 months. I would not at all be surprised to see this war last three years until the end of the Trump administration. But, ultimately, I think, we haven't seen it yet. We've only seen three Republicans in Congress oppose the war. Basically, Congress gave a blank check to Trump when they opposed the Iran war resolution, which was, under the Constitution. It's Congress that should, authorize or declare war and not the president. So, this is an illegal and unconstitutional and unprovoked war of aggression against Iran. There was no rational or logical reason that we had to attack them, let alone attack them at this time. So I think the chances this goes on, past this year are pretty high at this point.
It's very disturbing, but it really is an illegitimate war in any way you could possibly cut it. It's illegal according to the Constitution. It's illegitimate. Again, according to, the way that America should wage wars, but it's also just morally objectionable and strategically invalid. That's why this whole thing to me is just so baffling. And we're gonna hold you over for the whole hour because I got a couple of videos I want to show you and get your input on, including a breaking video from CNN talking about the mining of the Straits of Hormuz. I want to find out how that changes the game in any way, and it appears as though it already is with Trump responding. We'll get response to that, as well as some of the statements from Hegseth and Senator Blumenthal, who says that, according to the classified briefings they're getting, boots on the ground look like an inevitability at this point, exactly like you're saying. And also we'll talk about how we can stop this, because I don't think anybody, any American who actually wants our country to do well, is cheering this on. We'll figure out why we're even doing it. On the other side, David Pine is my guest. Don't go anywhere, folks.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. But I got blown up in Iraq. I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, thealvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, Bandit.video, streaming, of course, on X. Make sure you're following all of our sites. You can keep up with the goings-on, especially if and when InfoWars ceases to be. Of course, we'll continue the operation in a different form, and you can support that operation into the future by going to thealexjonesstore.com, making a purchase, the new T3 iodine, 50% off for VIP members, 25% off introductory price. One of the most life-changing and incredible products you'll ever buy. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. My guest is David Pine. He currently serves as the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He previously served as the National Security Policy Director for United States Senator Mike Lee, and he served as a United States Army officer and worked as an international programs manager on the Department of the Army headquarters staff responsible for the countries of the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East, the Americas, and Africa from 2000 to 2003. He's an expert in geopolitics. And I think you mentioned mining the Strait of Hormuz. There is an announcement on that, and I want to get your response to it. This was posted just a couple minutes ago by CNN, an update to the strategic situation there in Iran. We'll get Mr. Pine's response on the other side. Let's watch.
Iran has begun laying mines in the Strait of Hormuz. This is according to two people familiar with the matter. It's another major complication as the world's top oil exporter warns there could be, quote, catastrophic consequences for oil markets if the conflict keeps disrupting ship and oil tanker traffic through the strait. He says beyond upending shipping and insurance, the ongoing disruption could snowball, threatening aviation, agriculture, and other industries. A short time ago, the White House repeated President Trump's promise to provide government-backed insurance as well as naval escorts to keep tankers moving. So far, those shipping companies are resisting traveling through the region while the fighting goes on.
So what do you think the consequence of this will be? Is this more of a military consequence or an economic consequence? How do you think this changes the landscape with these reports of mining of the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, I think President Trump, I think it was a True Social in which he basically said if Iran were to, block or shut down the Strait of Hormuz to oil tanker traffic, then, Trump would take measures to, essentially destroy Iran to make sure it never was able to rebuild and become a nation again. So, this is something that Iran essentially did. I think it was the day after the war. They effectively shut it down. Not so much with the naval blockade, but just with, the threat of being able to sink those tankers with very large supply of anti-ship missiles, cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, even hypersonic missiles. And it's obvious who controls the Persian Gulf, who controls the Strait of Hormuz. And it's not the U.S. Navy because, Trump has been unwilling to risk, sending U.S. warships within less than several hundred kilometers of the strait. So, I think Trump issued an empty threat that he is unable to enforce. The Strait of Hormuz, of course, it's about the same distance between the closest point of the English Channel, the Straits of Dover, about 23 miles versus I think 22 or 21 for the English Channel, the Straits of Dover. So, this is something that's eminently, enforceable by Iran. We could sink their entire Navy and they'd still have the capabilities, both in terms of mines, submarine launch torpedoes, as well as, anti-ship missiles to enforce their blocking of the straits. So this is something that President Trump should have planned for, but it appears increasingly he did not understand and did not plan for as part of his Operation Epic Fury.
How does that even make sense? Because I don't disagree with you, but I keep hearing that, like, they didn't know. You knew. I knew. Like, do you really think they didn't know? How could they not have known that this was the case? Like, that's what I don't understand. That's the only explanation. They must not have known, because why would you do this if you did know? But, like, how does that even make sense? How do they not know Iran's capabilities when we did? Does that even make sense to you?
Yeah, so I think there's a tendency on the part of international aggressors, as sadly President Trump has become. You know, he used to be a Nobel Peace Prize during his first term and during his first 3.5 months of this term. But then something happened, whether it's the Epstein files or something else, kind of pushed him to be this neocon, warmongering president, really just John McCain 2.0. Right. And I think what happened is, he engaged in this Venezuela regime change operation, which was really useless because, of course, he took Maduro and his wife in a snatch and grab kidnapping operation, but he left the Maduro regime firmly in power. Maduro's handpicked successor, Delcy Rodriguez, was vice president. Now she's interim president of communist Venezuela. Venezuela remains firmly allied with Russia and China. But anyway, it was a bloodless operation. Of course, we had some troops that were severely injured in the Maduro operation, but none killed. And I think President Trump just projected the Maduro operation to Iran. In fact, in the run up to his bombing of Iran, he was talking about sending special forces troops to try to do a snatch and grab of the Ayatollah himself. And instead, he decided that the prospects of that of success for that were much lower than simply trying to, blow them up with bombs. And of course, we know that the new Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khomeini is, you know, his father was killed, his wife was killed, his mother was killed, his sister was killed by the U.S. and Israel, his brother-in-law and either his niece or nephew. So he is, you know, he's wanting vengeance. He's not going to stop this war. You know, President Trump reportedly tried to offer a ceasefire the night of the first bombings occurred because Iran fired four anti-ship cruise missiles on the USS Abraham Lincoln, and reportedly, came fairly close to striking. And I think Trump kind of got freaked out a little bit, and you could see. He was captured on the cameras walking from, I think it was probably Marine Force One to the White House. And he normally stops, you know, no matter how late it is at night, if there's press, he'll talk. Right. And that was the one time that he looked a little bit scared and kind of unsure what to do. And he failed. He did not take any questions. He just walked back by the cameras, kind of looking down and, you know, looking to the press, but then looking away. So
certainly not the same attitude that he had following the Venezuela operation.
No, I think it was by night one of the war. I think he was, clearly understood that even though he had taken out, you know, reportedly 40 or 50 top Iranian leaders, that they'd already rejected his ceasefire offer and in no uncertain terms and told him to pound sand. Just like he essentially told them when they offered it a really good peace offer the night before the attacks began, and he rejected them. So you're right. I think Iran's leaders are in no mood to negotiate at this point, and President Trump is demanding their unconditional surrender, and that's not a recipe for peace. He can claim that the war is very very nearly complete, but if Iran refuses to stop attacking U.S. bases in the region and refuses to attack Israel, Trump is going to feel forced to keep retaliating.
How is Israel weathering all of this? There's a meme. I don't know if the crew can find it. I shared it on my X, but it's basically, you know, it's Iran and America sort of lobbing missiles at each other, both saying, we demand unconditional surrender. Meanwhile, Israel is the one getting hit by all of the missiles. I mean, they seem to be taking a pounding here. Again, I don't even know if that, once again, Israel totally bans and makes illegal anybody sharing, you know, video from there. So we don't really know what is actually happening, but it seems like Tel Aviv is getting pounded pretty badly. And yet Israel seems to be screwing us up constantly. They apparently, bombed these oil fields completely against Trump's wishes. Apparently it was an Israeli bomb that killed the people that Trump was hoping to work with to replace the Ayatollah, but they were killed by Israel. So like Israel seems to be kind of screwing us over. We seem to have different strategic, you know, goals. Yeah, here's the meme. I can't survive more of this. They're, of course, the ones who started the war. Meanwhile, Iran and America could kind of go on forever. How accurate is this meme, Mr. Vine, for the most unprofessional way to ask this? But, I mean, how accurate is that? How long can Israel survive, and what's the role they play in all this at this point?
Well, it's interesting that, most reports indicate that the reason that Trump negotiated a ceasefire of the 12-day war is because Israel was getting pounded by Iranian hypersonic missiles that they couldn't shoot down. Right. The air defense system is not equipped to be able to shoot down Iranian hypersonic missiles. And so they were getting through. They were hitting Israeli military bases and critical infrastructure. It was just a day or two ago that reportedly Iran hit Israel's largest power plant in Israel and took out 19% of their grid power and turned out the lights in Tel Aviv for I'm not sure how long, might have been minutes or hours, but clearly they're sending a message that despite the fact that President Trump's claiming that their Air Force, Navy, and missile forces and nuclear, weapons production centers are wiped out, they can still hit us back real hard. And they've really launched a lot of attacks against U.S. military bases in the region, dozens of military bases in multiple countries. And they're using that to kind of coerce our Gulf allies to try to pressure us to end the war, because they're shutting down, Gulf oil production, certainly Gulf oil traffic. The Strait of Hormuz is one of the key strategic choke points in the world through which 20% of all global oil passes. They're letting Chinese tankers go through and no one else. So, President Trump reportedly, you know, this is all part of his 4D chess master plan to, take out Chinese oil resources, given that up to, 25 to 30% of Chinese oil is obtained from Iran. But it's not, the war hasn't affected Chinese oil imports from Iran because Iran controls the straits and Iran is letting all the Chinese tankers pass through it. So it's only negatively impacting, the U.S. and allied economies, in some cases very, pretty massively. And of course, that's going to have huge effects for the midterms. Whereas if we had a chance to hold the Senate, as a Republican in November, I think those chances have now been flushed down the toilet by President Trump.
I agree, unfortunately. And actually, I was planning on later in the show playing a video of both Lindsey Graham basically saying, I like Israel more than America, and I wish I lived there. Totally crazy. And then, of course, his competitor, like somebody challenging him for a Senate seat, is a far leftist radical communist, but she presents herself as, I'm just the mom down the street that wants to help, rescue America from these insane people like Lindsey Graham. So they're just handing it over to the Democrats. I mean, they're going to be radical. They're going to be insane. But all they have to do is go, hey, we're not starting wars in Iran like these crazy people. And they're going to win. So it's just, it is inexplicable. Again, this is just add that to the list of strategically, it's stupid. Morally, it's stupid. Politically, it's suicidal, which is why it's just so utterly baffling why all of this is happening. I want to get your comments on this. This was Senator Blumenthal earlier today. He came out of an Iran briefing and gave a quick press conference. Clip number 3 here. This is from C-SPAN, Senator Richard Blumenthal. Let's watch and we'll get your comments on the other side.
I emerged from this briefing as dissatisfied and angry, frankly, as I have from any past briefing in my 15 years in the Senate. I am left with more questions than answers, especially about the cost of the war. My questions have been unanswered, and I will demand answers because the American people deserve to know. And I guess I am most concerned about the threat to American lives of potentially deploying our sons and daughters on the ground in Iran. We seem to be on a path toward deploying American troops on the ground in Iran to accomplish any of the potential objectives here. And there is also, as disturbingly as anything else, the specter of active Russian aid to Iran putting in danger American lives. Literally, Russia seems to be aiding our enemy actively and intensively with intelligence and perhaps with other means. And China also may be assisting Iran. So the American people deserve to know much more than this administration has told them about the cost of the war, the danger to our sons and daughters in uniform, and the potential for further escalation and widening of this war, a war of choice made by this president, not chosen by the American people, with potentially huge consequences to American lives.
So it just shows you how upside down and backwards the world is when I'm agreeing with the despicable Senator Blumenthal. But I can't help disagree. I can note the irony that he's literally wearing a Ukrainian flag pin while he says this, while he decries the overseas wars. So he mentioned a couple things there. He seems, fairly sure that boots on the ground is next. I want your comments on that. But also, are they surprised that Iran or that China and Russia, rather, are using Iran as a proxy to wage war against America by providing them, possibly targeting or weapon systems or intelligence? It's what we did to them in Ukraine. It's just we're of course, our own bad activities are biting us in the butt. David Pine, what's your take on what Mr. Blumenthal said right there?
Well, firstly, I want to comment briefly on what you said before. I'm old enough to remember during the first election that I was old enough to vote in 1988 that Republicans were running ads that saying that Democrats started all the big wars and the Republican presidents end them. So Democrats started World War One, World War Two, Korean War, Vietnam War. Republican presidents ended the Korean War, with Eisenhower in 1953 and with Nixon in 1973. In Vietnam. So as you stated, I think that the party of peace is typically the victor in presidential elections. And President Trump ran as the candidate of peace in three different elections, legitimately so. And now he's going to be running as the candidate of war and the party of war with the Republican Party. And that's going to drag us down to defeat, perhaps with a generational Democrat, victory and takeover of all branches of government in terms of the White House and members, both houses of Congress. But in terms of Blumenthal, yeah, I think it was, I was watching a Senate hearing with Elbridge Colby, our excellent Undersecretary of War. And one of the Democrats, it might have been Blumenthal or might have been Senator Kaine, stated that, Putin started a reckless war of choice in Ukraine. And I don't know if he made that. Oh, actually, it wasn't Putin. He said that maybe Trump did that in Iran. Or no, I'm sorry. It was the chairman, the Republican chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, stated that it was Putin that started a reckless war of choice in Ukraine, ignoring the fact that that's exactly what Trump did in Iran. Yeah. A reckless war of choice. We didn't have to fight. And so, but it's interesting, your comment also about agreeing with Blumenthal. You know, this is probably the first time in decades that I've turned on CNN and MSNBC and have been agreeing with them on the Iran issue, because, right. 99% of what the Democrats say, I strongly disagree with, but I just can't stand all the lies, whether it's a regime change in Venezuela, which I support in theory, but not in terms of how we did it. And then with Iran, these are neocon operations. They're globalist deep state. I'm just amazed that only three congressional Republicans oppose the war in Iran when it's so obviously, it's worse than what Bush did in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really don't see anything happening between now and November that's going to make people think, oh, you know what, that was a good idea. I mean, there are no victory conditions that would make all of this worth it. And as you point out, Venezuela, I think, was sort of grooming America into Iran in more ways than one. I think the conversations that were had about, well, is this a valid military target? These boats, are they really a imminent threat? I mean, obviously, that was sort of setting a precedent, knowing that they would be using those same arguments to go into Iran a little bit later. I mean, how strategic do you think that was? How much do you think Venezuela had to do with setting the stage for what they knew would be a invasion or a war against Iran around February of this year?
Well, I think, I mean, President Trump, his ambitions seem boundless. It's like he switches from one day or one week from one country to another. First it was Venezuela, and then it was Greenland, and then he decided that Denmark was too powerful for the U.S. to fight them militarily, so he gave up and unconditionally surrendered on the one issue that I would have loved to see him fight, is to invade and take over Greenland, which is a country with 53,000 people that really there's no good reason to not have it be part of the United States or under U.S. control. And, we were afraid of Denmark. We're not afraid of Iran that likely has nuclear weapons, but we're afraid of Denmark. Really, of course, it was the neocons that, talked about, well, that could be the end of NATO if we did that. But then, of course, after Greenland, he moved on to Iran and Cuba. And he can't stay focused. There's a axiom of strategy is that you have to stay focused on one. You fight one more at a time. And President Trump, he loves to fight multiple wars simultaneously. he's got the Ukraine war. He promised to end on day one. That's still going on, 14 months into his presidency almost. He easily could have ended that. I presented him with the plan. I actually got the plan to one of his top national security cabinet members, Tulsi Gabbard. First time I'm revealing that. Tulsi Gabbard got a copy of my plan. I don't think it got past her, but certainly elements of my peace plan were incorporated into the Trump peace plan. Probably just because they were good ideas, not because they took them from me. I'm not claiming any credit on that, but he could have ended that war with a bilateral agreement with Russia. Instead, he wants to keep fighting that and giving Ukraine 3,550 ERAM missiles, risking World War III on that front. And now, as you mentioned, he's getting the blowback, you know, just as the U.S. attempted in many ways unsuccessfully to try to weaken Russia militarily, economically with a long war in Ukraine. That's exactly what Russia and China are doing to us, will do to us in Iran. They will weaken the U.S., deplete all our offensive and defensive missiles so we can't fight them in a big war either in Eastern Europe or Taiwan. And I think, you know, a lot of strategic thinkers are saying that Russia and China will be the big victors of prolonged, protracted U.S. regional war with Iran. I think that's what I've been saying from the beginning.
And just quickly before we have to wrap up, what is the effect on the Ukraine war that this is having? I mean, are there munitions being drawn away from there? Is that changing the calculus of how long that war is going to go on in any significant way?
Well, there are a lot of neocon and neoliberal articles, writers that have stated exactly that, you know, this will help Putin win the war in Ukraine because it dries up the armaments that the U.S. could have supplied to Ukraine. It also, you know, greatly increases oil prices to make Russian crude much more attractive, you know, and it increases the incentives to for the, you know, the U.S. and our allies to start importing more Russian oil to reduce the price, the overall global price of oil. And as we saw that, you know, Trump is already, he's encouraging India to buy Russian oil to help keep the prices, relatively lower. So I do think that this increases the chances that Russia can conquer Ukraine sooner, although I think that Ukraine will run out of troops by certainly by November in either case. So I think Ukrainian defeat this year and surrender are inevitable. I think Taiwan could move on, China could move on Taiwan in April or October, which are the two best months to invade. So I think this is really going to be, historians are going to look back on this war as probably the worst strategic foreign policy mistake we've seen in probably since the end of World War II.
That's what I've been saying. I've been asking, is this the biggest mistake of all time? Because if you laid out, as you lay out there, the possibility for negative consequences are sort of endless, and the positive consequences I still have never seen elucidated anywhere. So all risk, no reward, completely insane, incredible stuff. David Pine, follow him on his website, emptaskforce.us, his Substack, dpine.substack.com. And if, of course, you can follow him on X. What's your X account? It's not your name.
It's at America First Con.
At America First Con. David Pine, emptaskforce.us, dpine.substack.com. Thank you so much for coming on, sir. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Harrison. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. We'll be back at the third hour, folks. Don't go anywhere.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification and the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandstore.com. is T3. It's X2 back even better. at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.